Great trial lawyers are made, not born. Welcome to Verdict Academy, preserving trial wisdom for trial lawyers. Join host Kevin Morrison, trial attorney in San Francisco, as he recreates those invaluable hallway conversations that remote work has made rare. Candid insights and hard-won lessons from America's most accomplished trial lawyers. Produced and powered by Law Pods.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Verdict Academy. Today, it's my great pleasure and an honor to have my friend and outstanding trial lawyer, Jerry Popovich. Jerry is the managing partner of the Orange County office of Hawkins, Parnell, and Young. He has decades, I won't say how many decades, Jerry, decades of trial experience. He has tried in excess of 80 jury trials, not only to the highest degree of competence and ability, but the highest degree of professionalism, civility, and integrity. How do we know that? We know that because his peers say that and judges say that. Jerry is a member of three incredibly coveted trial lawyer organizations, ABOTA, the American Board of Trial Advocates, ACTL, the American College of Trial Lawyers, and ISOB, the International Society of Barristers. All three of those organizations are invitation only. You can't just apply and write a check to get in. You cannot apply. You're the top 500 trial lawyers in the country. One of those folks or more have to nominate you, and you go through a very extensive vetting process, including judges. So we know Jerry is admired and held in esteem by his peers, and he's admired and held in esteem by me because I had the great pleasure of trying a case against him last year, and I can tell you he is top-notch. He's kind, nice people in trial. I don't think I did it that time, and professional the whole way through. Jerry is also passionate about the Seventh Amendment. He loves jury trials, and not only doesn't he just talk the talk, he walks the walk. How does he do that? Well, he always has lesser experienced attorneys, second chair cases with him to get them trial experience. And he teaches trial tactics at his law firm, the Law Firm Trial Academy, which is a great way of passing down this art of jury trial down. Jerry Popovich, welcome to Verdict Academy, my friend.
Thank you, Kevin. Wow, I couldn't have written it any better. In fact, it sounds like I did.
I'll take Zelle payments, please. Venmo after the show. Yeah, no, every word's true. Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for coming on.
And I appreciate you using the term art, because that was my first boss who had multiple hundreds of trials and said, they call it the practice of law because it's an art, it's not a science. Every case is different, every juror is different, every witness is different.
That's right. Unfortunately, it's becoming a lost art. So one of the focuses of this podcast, one of the reasons, probably the primary one you came on, is because you are passionate about making sure this art gets passed on to our next generation, because someday we'll be gone, Jerry, but hopefully there'll be another generation of trial lawyers doing what we're doing.
My boss said that he got his first trial the first week he was a lawyer. It took me a few years, but I was a second-year lawyer for a court trial and a fourth-year lawyer for a jury trial. And now, you know, we've got 10-year lawyers that have never tried a case and don't have the opportunity. So I appreciate that you've created this podcast and let me come on, and we can chat about some trial issues and have some fun, and let's maybe motivate the next generation to want this, because it's worth wanting and it's worth doing right.
100%. Couldn't agree more. And we are going to talk about, you know, the format of the show is three discrete trial tips, and we'll talk about those in a second. But I do want to ask you this general question. How did you become a trial lawyer? What do you love about the profession? How did you get there initially? How did you get into this?
It's rather funny because I entered law school at the age of 20. I wasn't Doogie Howser or anything, but it was early. And I went into law school thinking that I would be the kind of lawyer that sat in a small office, probably a little dark, and drafted motions and drafted appeals and worked on paper and never saw a courtroom. That literally was my mindset going in. I was pulled out of my shell by an evidence professor who was a fairly well-known at the time public defender who was high up. He tried the high-profile cases in the public defender's office. And the way he did evidence was he would introduce an issue and he would have two of the students stand up and you're to get this evidence in and you're to try to keep this evidence out. And he would then have oral arguments. Well, I found that my competitive side enjoyed this a lot. I wasn't very good, but I played sports in high school and into junior college and I liked competition. Well, all of a sudden, that competition Jones that had been missing for a while came back. So that really drove me into the idea of being a trial lawyer. My first firm, I went to a great place, small firm, but both partners had in excess of 100 trials. And it was kind of just, that's what you do. You work up a case, and if you can't agree, you try it. So they help take some of the mystique out of it. And hopefully that's one of the things we can talk about here is I tell the lawyers in my office, trial work, it's not magic. We are not magicians that just go in and wave a wand and magic comes out of our mouths. It's just hard, hard work and long hours and sweat and tears and lack of sleep. If you're willing to pay that price, you can do this.
It is all that, but boy, is it fun, isn't it?
It can be. It can also be terrifying and horrible at times too.
Yeah, but boy, every day I'm in trial, almost every day I'm in trial, it's a way better day than being in the office responding to emails. I just love it. It's just too much fun. It's just too much fun to have a try cases.
More than once, I've been picking a jury, which is often one of the more challenging parts of the case. And we're going to talk about that today because you don't know what's coming. You don't know what a juror is going to say. More than once, I've been in the middle of jury selection, and literally the thought crosses my mind as I'm trying to think of the next question to ask is, I am exactly where I should be. This is so much fun. I'd rather do this than most anything that would be work-related.
Yeah, I walk out sometimes like, I can't believe I got paid to do this. It's just not fair. All right, well, thanks for that. That's great, and I do agree. You got to get in, and there's a fear of trial, which is totally legitimate. I had it. Everybody has it. It's normal to be afraid of trial, but the longer you delay the entry into trial, the larger the fear is and the more this, oh my God, trial and this crazy thought of what trial is. So you got to get in there and just do it.
Well, and that's why I think taking second chairs is so important. I mean, they see that I make mistakes. I will sit down and go, wow, I wish I hadn't asked that last question. And they see that you don't have to be perfect. You can lose a ruling on a motion in limine, or you can lose a ruling on an evidentiary issue, or an objection gets overruled that should have been sustained. It doesn't mean you're losing the case. You have to be able to learn not to sweat those every single little battles, because literally I used to sweat them all.
Yeah.
And then found out that when I lost the bunch but still won the case, got to focus on winning the war, not every single battle.
100%. 100%, my friend. All right, well, let's get into it. This is we do a tight podcast here, and we're doing three tips that you want to pass on. Number one, I believe, is informal focus groups. How do you use them, and why do you use them, Jerry?
Sure. Well, first, a formal focus group is where you pay professionals. They bring in members of the public for a price, and those people will listen to witness testimony. They will watch how a witness testifies. They will listen to issues and provide feedback, and you're getting feedback from real people. You're getting, more importantly, reactions from real people. Well, if you boil it down to reactions from real people, you don't necessarily have to pay people to do that. You can use family, use friends, use acquaintances at a cocktail party. And what I have found highly successfully, strangely enough, over the years, is that if I'm on the fence of whether I should argue a certain defense, like comparative fault of a plaintiff who is very sympathetic, or how much is this worth when I had, and this is actually one of the examples I can give, 4.5-year-old girl bitten by a dog, big C-shaped scar right around her eye. What is that worth in non-economic damages for the pain and suffering and living with a scar? So I have developed a group, or actually several groups, that I will go to when I have questions about how do you react to this? If I say this way, I've literally gone to pool parties in the summer with a couple photographs of an injury. And when the conversation begins to drag, or now they know that I do this to them sometime.
Do they still sit next to you at the pool, Jerry, or do they start moving their chairs away?
Actually, the funny part is conversation starts to drag. I literally now get, what did you bring for us this time, Jerry? And they want to. So run these ideas by them. I'll give you the prime example. This is the best example I can give you. That little girl, 4.5-year-old, bitten by a dog, strict liability in California, liabilities admitted. There was a lot of other things going on in that trial. But the big issue I had is how much or how little, as a defense lawyer, which is my focus, am I going to argue that this is worth for the non-economic pain and suffering? plaintiffs were going on and on about how this will affect her going to the prom, how it will affect her on her wedding day to live with this scar. And they were, you know, putting on the big push and asking for millions of dollars. I was inclined to go into the low six figures as far as a value, but my wife had a lunch with some girlfriends at a park. And I said, hey, take these pictures of the little girl's scar and ask your friends, what do they think about it? I'm really interested in a female perspective in particular. And she did. And I get a call from my wife while she's at lunch going, they need more details. How old is she? What does it look like now? And, you know, ultimately that group of eight women thought that my number in the low six figures was too high. I was surprised. I was reticent about using it at trial, but ultimately embraced it. And they gave a number of $75,000.
Wow.
And I argued $75,000. Verdict came back $75,000.
Wow.
That's a prime example of how just getting reactions. Now, obviously, not giving away attorney-client privilege stuff, but all we did is show some pictures of this little girl, told them that she's doing wonderfully at school. She's riding horses and getting ribbons. She's living a fabulous life. My theme for the trial was she was a rock star before. She's a rock star now. And I actually took that from one of her plastic surgeons who said this little girl's a rock star. So I wasn't making it up. And the theme, working with the informal focus group, saved us a bunch of money on the defense side. And the jury walked away very pleased. And that was a very fair result.
Wow, that's a great story and a great illustration of how to use informal focus groups. Do you ever use formal focus groups?
Absolutely.
Under what circumstances do you decide to do that? Big exposure cases, I'm assuming, or how do you decide to use a regular one?
Different ways I use them. I've come in where there is a client that will be repeatedly before the courts because it's a very large, high exposure type client. And I've worked with jury consultants to do formal focus groups where certain defenses are being tested. Focus groups tend to be discrete. You want to take two or three discrete issues, put it in front of them, see how they react. Say, was the evidence enough? What else would you have liked to have heard? And that helps you focus on what evidence to bring in. And then what we've done is ultimately after we've tested and focus groups these discrete issues, we put it all together into an opening statement and do a mock trial. And then see if we have moved the needle as far as how the jury is reacting to my product manufacturer firms. So that's one way to use the formal. Another one that I've been turned on to in the last couple of years, saw it actually at an event, and this person was a presenter. In mock trials, I'm told by the jury consultants that they are highly predictive for liability, for comparative fault, for things like that, apportionment of fault. But because the numbers are usually in the 30 to 36 range, not highly predictive for damages, you need a bigger sample. Well, there is now companies out there doing online focus groups. And although you got to keep this show at least PG-13 rated, I assume. I had a question of how much is a lost testicle? A gentleman was riding his motorcycle. We cut him off. He rams his motorcycle right into us, slides forward on the motorcycle, ruptures a testicle, and has to have it removed. Within a month, he's back to sexual activity. He is claiming it doesn't look well when he's intimate with his partner, but he was highly distressed about it. And to be frank, there's not a lot of jury results out there for a lost testicle to go and do research on. So what these online systems do is they can get 250, 350 people to hear literally like a one-page basic outline of what the case is about, and then just ask them, how much is it worth? You give them a low number and you give them a high number to kind of put them in a bracket, and there's going to be some people at the high number and there's going to be some at the low. But when you have 200 people kind of at the top of the bell curve, it gives you a pretty good idea of what that's worth. And I have found that to be very effective for damage-related, very specific damage questions, especially on an issue like that, where you can't do research into past verdicts to see what juries have been doing.
Yeah, great point. I use them too. I think they're very valuable. I was skeptical initially. I'm a nerd on this stuff. I think you are probably too. I love getting in. This is the sciencey part, right? We're talking about there's the art of trial, which 100% is an art. But to the extent that you can incorporate more science into it. I'm a fan of that, to the extent that you can get science into it. I think that helps, as opposed to some plants lawyer. I'm the plants lawyer. I'm just picking some number out of the air. I've got a reason. I know I feel comfortable with a number because 300 people said this is the range where you're fine with. And if you go north of that, you're really turning people off. If you go south of that, you're going to get a lower verdict, right? I can ask for too little. I'm hurting my client because I'm leaving money on the table.
Well, in this day of, I believe, high risk, particularly since COVID for the defense side of what the dollars of some of these verdicts are, sometimes a corporate or an insurance client from my side has to have some comfort level before they'll take a case to trial. And this kind of scientific approach may give them that comfort level or may loosen the purse strings, depending on the results, that will get the case settled and they'll get rid of any risk. So they're useful in both ways. And I am finding, although they're the professional ones, not the online one I'm talking about, that's usually under 10 grand is my experience. But the professional ones where you're setting up a full-blown mock trial and you're bringing in jurors and got jury consultants vetting the jurors to make sure that the males to females educated versus less educated compares to the venue you're in. I mean, you're talking six figures. That's a very expensive process.
Yeah. All right. Second topic. Talk to me about your thoughts on jury selection.
So a jury selection is something that you really can't practice for. You can practice your opening in front of a mirror, in front of family, friends, and get feedback. You can practice closing. You can practice witness exams in deposition, for instance, and I strongly encourage, not the whole deposition, but take segments. If you're deposing a party or you're deposing an expert, practice across, or even if it's a client and you're asking some questions, practice direct, how to ask proper open-ended questions to get the information you want. Those things can be practiced. A room full of strangers, some of which may want to make game of you. They might think that will be fun. It's hard to recreate the dynamic of a courtroom for jury selection. So it comes down to what can you do? Well, even though if this will show up, I've read books, Mastering Voir Dire. I will tell you, I read this probably after I tried 20 cases. I didn't agree with a lot of it, but some of it, I picked up some points. But for somebody new, maybe it's helpful. I also have Pattern Voir Dire Questions, which has just suggestions of topics to hit in certain kinds of cases. And even at my vast age and experience, it is good to be reminded of things that we should be looking for. I am not technological. So asking about social media type things, I'm not all that keyed into, but these books can help. And what that does is it creates a plan. And that's my point. Is even if you have never seen a jury picked and you have to go pick your first jury, there are things out there you can read. There are books, there are treatises. Spend some time and look. Come up with a plan. That will help give you confidence that even if you stumble over your questions, you're going to get the right topics brought out. Read the law. It's not very much. California Code of Civil Procedure Section 220 to 234. Essentially encapsulates everything you'll need to know for picking a jury and picking alternates. Some of those things judges don't know. They think the alternates are going to go in the order, 1, 2, 3, 4. No, the code says it's random. It's a draw. Understand the law and it will help give you guidelines. In there, it talks about what the standards are. You're entitled to 12 entirely impartial jurors. And I think Kevin actually was the first plaintiff lawyer that actually ever used that phrase. I use that phrase. A lot of lawyers talk about for cause challenges. Is this a race and who's starting ahead? And I've had judges deny my cause challenges because of that. So I just went straight to the law. When the law says I'm entitled to 12 entirely impartial, when Kevin gets somebody close, he says, can you be entirely impartial in this case? Or is this not the case for you? And that's what I find to be one of the best ways to get a cause challenge. Again, I come back to, I focus my effort in training, although I do teach in other places, second chairing, one-on-one, sit a lawyer down, let them watch somebody experience and do it. How you ask the questions, how you react when somebody's on the attack because they don't like you, they don't like lawyers in general, how you maintain your cool and your patience, and create an impression of professionalism that the jurors that you keep are going to remember. All those things are important. So plan, prepare, will help confidence. One thing I will tell you is you've got to have the right attitude going into jury selection. You got to be curious, you know, find out about them. Act like you're interested in them.
You might, liking people may be an important part.
That doesn't hurt. Be willing to take a joke directed at you. Laugh with them and roll with it. Got to have a thicker skin. I once asked a juror who had been a defendant in multiple cases because he was a contractor. I got the impression he wasn't loving lawyers. So I asked him, I said, what do you think about lawyers? And he exploded with fire. The other jurors in the room thought it was hilarious, but he was furious. His face was red. He was visibly angry. And you just got to stand there and take it. And then ask the follow-up question. So your feelings about lawyers, does that transfer to me? Is that going to transfer to my client because they're represented by me? How do you feel about that? And ultimately, maybe this person could still be a great juror for your side, a juror that you're willing to accept once you get past that anger. Most people, once they vent, calm down, and they might even appreciate the fact that how you took it. You might have created a relationship there. You have that experience, Kevin?
Oh, 100%. I mean, people want to be polite. Jury selection is an interesting, they're hauling these people out of, you know, their lives, putting them in this artificial atmosphere. They've gone through metal detectors. They're missing work. They're missing childcare. They're not happy. They shouldn't be happy. I totally get it. And so then you got these guys that show up with the suits and this and that and this weird, and you stand for the judge. It's such a weird thing. And people are reading things. And you're taking an oath. And what the hell is going on here? And you're going in front of people and you're going to ask me what in front of all these people? Most people don't want to. They want to shut up and be polite, basically, and try to get out of it, right? That's generally what the default position is. And you got to be prepared to be a real human being and connect with that person, actually like that person, to get that person to open up about what they really feel and understand that when the person tells you something bad, they have permission to do that and let everybody else know they have permission to do that. And then you get people talking and you get their real thoughts out.
I mean, let's face it. We don't get to pick the jurors. We get to pick the jurors we get rid of. And so our focus is more on who's not the right juror for our case. You want those people expressing their animosity towards your. And one last thing on this topic that I want to mention, because it's a great way for a young lawyer to get information before they even stand up and ask questions, which is juror questionnaire. Some judges don't like them because they build in more time to the process and they just want to go, go, go. But the Judicial Council has a very basic juror questionnaire, and you can tack on to it if it's a personal injury case, which is what Kevin and I both do on different sides of the bar. But the questionnaire has an attachment for personal injury cases, and it will give you basic information. It's a place for them to write things down. And what I find is out of a group of 18, say, you may get 5 or 6 people that talk quite a bit. What you're not getting is all the volume you might want from the other 12 or 13. And with questionnaires, you're getting individualized information when they have a chance to ponder and think and write things down. I'm a fan of questionnaires. I try some fairly complex. A lot of cases involving cancer, which is always a tough issue. Everybody's been touched by cancer. And as somebody who may have a product that is claimed to have caused cancer, that's touchy. Questionnaires are wonderful. They can really, really just tell us what they feel. And so you walk in armed with these questionnaires and you can go right to it. Mr. Smith or Ms. Jones, in your questionnaire, you told me this. What experience do you base that on? Where is that coming from? How is that going to make you feel when I represent a client that makes these products?
I can't agree with you more. So I'm sitting here nodding the whole time. I agree with you 100%. All right, last topic. No shortcuts to a good witness exam, including AI. Because we've got to talk about AI. Everybody's talking about AI, right, Jerry? What are the no shortcuts to a good witness exam? Talk to me about that.
Well, I got to start with the war story because it sets it all up. This was fairly recently, within the last year. Tried a case, personal injury case. And the plaintiff attorney has tried cases for 40 years, a lot of experience, well over 50 trials. And he was quite good, built rapport with jurors, very good in jury selection. And I expected him, when my witnesses were called in the plaintiff's case under Evidence Code Section 776, that he was going to pound me. And my witnesses had weaknesses that I expected him to exploit. That's what you guys do and do it very well. And each witness, I thought, it wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be. And we skated out of there with only a little bit of damage instead of a lot of damage.
Please tell me this wasn't me, Jerry.
No. Definitely not the guy. And this happened witness after witness, percipient witnesses, expert witnesses. I felt like if 100% is what could be obtained, and let's say a good cross by any of us maybe is getting 80 or 90%, and that's a really good one, this person was hitting 40%. So I was surprised. Closing arguments are done, shaking hands, thanking them for, you know, a civil trial, appreciate the trial like we hopefully can do with our opponents, as Kevin and I did. He said with a big grin, he goes, "I discovered something fantastic. It saves me so much time." He says, "I put the depo transcripts of the witnesses, it's ChatGPT Pro."
Yeah.
He said, "All of my exam outlines came from AI." And so basically, he told a story that made me think that each night he went back after court when I was slaving away, reading transcripts, poring over transcripts. He was running it through ChatGPT, getting his outline for the next day, going out to dinner, going to bed early, getting a good night's sleep when I was not. And it just clicked. That explains it. That's why this very experienced, well-thought-of lawyer wasn't killing my witnesses like I expected him to. And it's because he took the easy way out and he was relying on AI to do his work for him. So that's why this topic is no shortcut. There is no shortcut for poring over depo transcripts and really focusing on the words. You know, witnesses tell you things, but also in how they answer questions, they often hide things. You ask a broad question, they answer narrow, hoping you don't ask the rest. And look, we've all taken depos where we didn't ask the rest because we moved on to the next topic. But you can even see from the way they're phrasing answers. And you only get that when you pour time and focus into it. Another quick example. This literally happened at 11 o'clock at night on a day that I started at 4 a.m., had a full day of trial, and I had a general contracting expert for the plaintiff on the stand the next day talking about damage caused and cost of repairs. And this was their big dollar guy. Cost of repairs is where they were going to put a lot of stuff in. This was a property issue that went into a bad faith case. So I was trying the bad faith defense. And I thought at 11 o'clock at night, this guy's deposition was taken twice. The lawyer I was associating in with to try the case with specifically asked, "Are you a general contractor?" And in both transcripts, he said, "I've been doing general contracting work for over 30 years. That attorney did not ask the question, did not see the sidestep. And fortunately, with a computer at our fingertips, I went onto the state contractor's license board and determined that he had been an employee working under other licensed general contractors, working under their licenses for years. Obviously, this was a complete surprise at trial because the attorney working the case up had given no hint that they knew what was going on. And I didn't know until, you know, not even 12 hours before the person was on the stand. And this is where the hard work pays off. And this is why it's worth it. This is a couple times in a career moment. Plaintiff puts on qualifications and asks the first question that goes into a substantive issue. I stand up and ask to voir dire the witness on qualifications. And the judge gave me a look like, "You've got to be kidding." But I had built up enough credibility. He goes, "Okay, Mr. Popovich, I'll give you a few minutes." My first question was, "Is you've never been an actual licensed general contractor, correct?" And he goes, "That's true." Now I had the judge's attention. Now we had the jury's attention. And I got to take him through the fact that he had this job, but that was somebody else's license. This is where the work and the sweat and the lack of sleep pays off. At the conclusion of my voir dire in front of the jury, in a very grand way, I moved to strike all of his testimony and asked that he be prevented from giving any opinions. And the judge dismissed the jury, and the jurors, at all this going down, they knew drama when they saw it. He sent him out in the hall, and the judge said, "Do you have another witness?" Plaintiff said, "Yes." He goes, "We're not completing this person." He goes, "I'm going to think about this person overnight. I'll let you know, and he's going to be back here tomorrow morning in case I let him go on." He goes, "But I'm seriously thinking about not." That's where it pays off. That's when you go home and go, "Man, that was fun."
Oh, 100%. And look, even if the judge allowed him to testify, what is the jury going to do with his testimony anyway? You've wiped him out before he gives his opinions. It doesn't matter. It's almost at that point, just let him, whatever, let him talk what he wants to talk about. They don't care anymore.
No, they adopted the defense numbers. So a couple of things I would say on direct, read all the testimony, know what exhibits you want to use, meet with the witness ahead of time. I am not a fan of practicing. I am not a fan of taking them literally question by question. First of all, I don't write out questions. I write topics or points of interest. And so that I don't even phrase my questions the same two times in a row. I want to talk about and remind them of the topics that they will hear from the plaintiff's side, from my side, and we go through it. It's hard to do during trial. Yes, it sometimes has to be done, but I like it in person. I can do it by Zoom if I have to, but you got to do the work. Cross exams. I'm a firm believer in start strong, finish strong. And you have to be able, and this is a phrase I'm stealing from an old timer, Hall of Famer plaintiff lawyer. You have to sit down graceful. Don't use a topic as your last topic that is in dispute that's going to be a problem. There's nothing worse than getting an objection sustained and saying, well, Your Honor, I have no further questions. It's a horrible way to sit down. You feel like you've just been taken to the woodshed and beat. But for cross-exam, you got to know your topic. If it's a technical expert, you may not have to know everything they know, but boy, you need to know what they're talking about, what your expert is going to talk about. And you need to know the science, you need to know the medicine, whatever we're talking about. And if you have impeachment, it has to be at your fingertips. Great impeachment loses its power if it takes you a minute and a half to find the depo testimony or the separate exhibit. You need to have that ready. And how does that all happen? No paralegal, they can help, but they can't put you so together that you know exactly where everything is. You're going to have to do time in the materials. You're going to have to do time in your trial notebook. You're going to have to do time in your outline. I still write my own outline. And even if it's an expert I've seen before, I will create a new outline. I may get some help from an old outline, but I do not want to rely on the old thing because things have changed. Hey, in medicine changes almost every day. Things that I used to get from medical doctors on a cross-exam, I can't get now because now the understanding of the science is a little different. Hopefully I've given enough examples. And Kevin, you can assure you got examples, is there's no shortcut. It's just hard.
It's just hard work. Now, let me just say this, and we got to run pretty soon. I could talk to you for 2 days about trial, and that wouldn't be enough. But on the AI issue, I 100% agree with you that you can't rely on it completely. I would say that it can be a tool to help you get information on this topic exactly. You can run, let's say it's a medical doctor or professor. You can run this person through AI and you'll find the syllabi that he courses he taught, slides that the doctor presented at conferences. If those are contradictory to the positions he's taking at trial, there's nothing better than confronting an expert saying, you know, I never do back surgery in this situation when he authored a slide that has the opposite thing. I mean, impeachment is so critical, but it's got to be important. You see people impeach people on, oh, you graduated from college in 1988 and not to 1987. Like, really? I mean, now the jury thinks that you're the picky jerk. But if you get a guy on, I've never been to a medical school or I've never been a general contractor, the impeachment has got to be important, not picky.
Yeah. And my negative impression from AI was that one experience I told you about. There's no question that it is becoming a more and more valuable tool in extracting useful information from volumes of information. And you're talking about coming up with things. And I will tell the listening audience that Kevin filleted a couple of my witnesses with old, out-of-date website pages that I had never seen until I got an exhibit book and then tried to figure out where did these come from. And they go, oh, yeah, that was our stuff from 5 years ago that you've never seen. But Kevin had.
When the accident happened, to be fair. But okay, yes.
But I did not the archived website pages to know what Kevin was going to find when he found some kind of data mining company, I'm assuming, that dug down and found those pages. But what is it? It's work.
Hard work. It's hard work. All right, Jerry, any last final parting words to young or less experienced trial attorneys? You want to words of wisdom before we close the episode?
Come in with your eyes open that this will be hard. And for your first trial or second, third, and fourth, scary. But it is a profession and a task worth doing and worth doing well. Clients are going to need it. The fact is the fewer and fewer trials there are, the more and more need there is going to be for lawyers who are willing to try cases. If you came to my firm, one of the things I ask is there's no wrong answer here, but tell me if you want to try cases. And be honest if you don't, because Jerry is not happy when he is told that you want to try a case. I'm relying on you being my second chair. And then you bag out a week before, which has happened, because you just think it's what you want to hear. If this is what you want, there are ways to get you there. There are people you can talk to. And yes, it's worth doing. And it can be the most fun thing you do in your career.
Yeah. Jerry, this is awesome. Like I said, I could talk to you forever. Thanks for being a guest. And more importantly, thank you for being a beacon of civility and integrity in this profession. I mean that. You're the best I've ever come across in terms of your confidence level is off the charts, but your civility is too. And you know, you're the kind of guy that we can have lunch in the middle of trial. And look, you're my opponent, not my enemy, man. And I know you feel the same way. And that's just how it should be. And I appreciate everything you've done to teach trial and get the art of trial out there, including this episode and what you do.
Well, let me respond by saying, Kevin, this is a great thing you're doing with this podcast, and hopefully it will inspire 1, 2, or 20 future trial lawyers. And if so, then it's worth our time and in getting into a great part of a great profession. And I thank you for inviting me. It was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure. All right. See you, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Verdict Academy. If today's insights resonated with you, please subscribe and share with colleagues. In a world where we see each other less, learning from experienced trial lawyers matters now more than ever. Join us next time. Produced and powered by LawPods.